Morning. The Gospel of John goes through a long evolution from eyewitness testimony way back when through various compositional and editing stages. You can see some of it here at the end, where it's talking about the previous witness who was now dead and says he wrote these things, but yet obviously I am writing after his death, because I'm telling you he's dead, and rewriting these things, editing these things, went on from some stages. Scholars estimate that surely John is the last of the four Gospels to be put in its final form, and probably about the year 100. So what does that mean? 100. Jesus was executed and rose about the year 30. That was 70 years before. Back up 70 years from today. You're in 1940. It was over a year before Pearl Harbor. How many people here remember Pearl Harbor? Raise your hands. I don't mean know about it, I mean remember it. How much do you remember? Not a whole lot, right? You were little teeny things, you know? Or you remember your parents telling you about it, and you know you were alive at the time. And that's sort of the way it was in the year 100. People who actually heard Jesus preach and watched him heal, most of them are dead. Most of the ones who are left are, you know, children at the time whose parents have refreshed their memory so they remember that they heard him, but it's more secondhand than first. The Christian community is full of second and third generation Christians. Not a lot of people around who had any face-to-face contact with Jesus. And people are asking, how do we know? They saw him, they heard him. Some of them even say they saw him and heard him after his death. We don't. Why do we believe? How can we be sure? John gives several reasons in these two chapters. Three at least. One that we looked at last week. Your own personal assurance. And he goes on to assure us that physical contact was not only necessary, but often misleading. Mary Magdalene, who loved Jesus as much or more than anybody else on earth, saw him standing there and thought he was the gardener. It wasn't until he called her by name that she recognized him. Thomas recognized him as his Lord and God only when Jesus challenged him, bring your finger here, put your hand in my side. So that's one way, by direct personal experience, to hear Jesus call your name. It doesn't happen for everybody. Even when it does, it's a little indistinct, right? Am I really hearing Jesus or am I listening to the echo of my own voice? What else can I do? Yeah. Today's gospel gives two more ways. First of all, we can rely on other people's testimony. Look at Simon Peter. Peter, biggest heart in the gospels probably. Most impetuous. Always out front. Not always the most perceptive. Not always the deepest. But always responding absolutely. After Christ's death. After his resurrection. Was that really him? Do I really believe? They're back home. And finally he announces, I'm going fishing. Now that might just mean I'm hungry. I think I'll go out and catch a fish for breakfast. More likely, I think it means I give up. I don't know what to do about this. I don't know whether it's really he's really risen or not. And if he is, I don't know what it means for me. I'm going back to something I understand. Fishing. I'm out of this disciple business. I'm a fisherman again. And the other guys say, yeah, we're with you. If he's out, we're out. They're out fishing. And all night they don't catch a thing. Only thing they were good at, now they can't even do that. Then morning. Well, even not quite morning. It's almost dawn. That half hour before the sun comes up. There's some light you can see, but not real well. In the Sea of Galilee in April, by this time of year, that time of the morning, there's almost bound to be a mist, a light fog over the sea. So even from 100 yards out, you can look in. You can see figures maybe on the shore. You can't make anything out. And they have this shouted back and forth discussion. And then all of a sudden they have a net full of fish. Peter doesn't get it. But John gets it. John, the sensitive one, puts the two and two together immediately. It is the Lord. Peter's eyes light up. Yeah, of course. What else would it be? And in an instant, he's up out of the boat, standing on the gunwale, diving off the gunwale, and swimming to shore for all he's worth, without even waiting for the rest of them in the boat. He didn't know. It didn't click for him until somebody pointed it out. And then, click, and bang. He knew, and he reacted. Let somebody point it out to you. The presence of the risen Christ. And then jump up on that gunwale and dive in the water. Swim for all you're worth. Third way. When they come ashore, Jesus is there. Is it really? There's still dim light. There's still a haze. So, visual, I'm not sure. Besides that, more spiritual. I've been up all night. I've been through this once before with this vision. Is it? Isn't? I don't. But then, next to him, it's a fire. And on the fire is fish and bread. Click, click. This is John, remember. In John, at the Last Supper, there is no account of the institution of the Eucharist. John gives us the story of the washing of the feet, but not of the breaking of the bread. Where does John talk about that? Chapter 6. Remember that? Not this summer, but last summer. It's in the middle of chapter 6 that Jesus gives this long discourse. Unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you shall not have life within you. And I will raise them up on the last day. That whole discourse about the bread being his flesh, the wine being his blood. What does it mean? Where does it sit in John? It's part of a homily at the synagogue in Capernaum. And it's immediately preceded by two stories. The story immediately before it is the walking on the water. And the story before that is the loaves and fishes. It's in the context of the loaves and the fishes that John teaches about the Eucharist. It's the bread and the fish that for John symbolize the body and the blood. And they come ashore and they see bread and fish on the fire. And Jesus says, come, have breakfast. And they know. This is the risen Lord. They recognize him in the meal. They know his presence in the breaking of the bread. This is here for us as well. It's not just for John's disciples in the year 100 or thereabouts that they're pointing that out. This is all for us. We are invited to recognize the presence of the risen Christ by our own experience when we hear him call our name, however indistinctly, however uncertainly. By cued experience of each other, when someone points him out, recognize his presence. And most especially and most dramatically, perhaps, when he sets the meal before us and says to us, come, have breakfast, we recognize him in the breaking of the bread. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.